If you're still waiting for a sign, here's another one. At California Psychics, we reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work for us. So we only connect you with the best. That's how we can guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And right now, new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. If that's not a sign, I don't know what is. Dramatic sound effect incoming. Experience the joy of certainty at CaliforniaPsychics.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. We have a great show headed up here for you. Dana Perino is going to join us in about 15 minutes from now. And we are going to talk about a story that kind of came about right there towards the end of our show yesterday. I'm sure you've heard about it quite a bit so far on 97.1. But a big development from the Supreme Court surrounding the Department of Education. And when you're thinking about the future of school choice, possibly when you're thinking about if you love public school and you want to keep your kids in public school, the reforming of public school, just to get back to education, just to get back to the math test scores that we want to see, the literacy numbers that we want to see. Yesterday was a huge step forward for the Trump administration's efforts in that.
The Supreme Court today said President Donald Trump may proceed with his plans to carry out mass layoffs at the Department of Education in the latest win for the White House. The justices lifting a lower court ruling that put an indefinite pause on Trump's plan while legal challenges play out. Trump ordered mass layoffs at the department earlier this year, cutting its workforce in half, but lower courts have blocked that effort, noting that the Education Department was created by Congress. In a scathing dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor called the decision, quote, indefensible.
So that was the reaction from the Supreme Court ruling yesterday, an NBC report. And it'll be important to understand exactly what this means. Does that mean, did the Supreme Court rule that the Department of Education is no more? No. Not so much. Greg Jarrett will join us at 1:30, and he's going to give us the legalese behind exactly what that ruling means, what step this might put the Trump administration into taking next, because certainly this isn't the end game for the president, his administration, and their efforts to try to reform education in our country. Linda McMahon is the Secretary of Education and of the Department of Education, and she's been very vocal, obviously, about what the goal is and what this ruling might mean.
What is your reaction and what does this actually mean for this process?
Well, thank you very much, Martha, for having me on. This is a real victory, I think, for the future of American education. I was so pleased with the Supreme Court's ruling today, and it just really reemphasized the fact that the president, clearly, of the United States is the head of the executive branch, and he's the one that has the ultimate authority over staffing levels, administrative organization, etc. And through his appointees, which are the secretaries that head these agencies, he expects those orders to be carried out. And so I'm just incredibly pleased that the authority was reinstated where it should be, which is back with the president and with me in this particular instance as Secretary of Education. This lifts the handcuffs off of what we've been trying to do, which really is to get education back to the states where the president believes it does belong. The best education is that closest to the student.
Amen to that. Listening to Secretary McMahon talk about returning education back to the states. Is public education going away? No, it's just going back to the hands of the states to regulate. Now, if you're in the state of Missouri, you're going, hooray. This is fantastic news. You trust your legislature, probably at least more than the folks in the state of Illinois do, to get this one right. But if you're in the state of Illinois, you're thinking, this is a disaster. I would trust a Republican federal government to oversee this more than I would the blue state legislature that is in the state of Illinois. Well, here's the deal, folks. You can much easier contact your state legislator, your senator, your state representative, and say, what the heck are you doing? Look at the literacy rates in the state. Look at the education that children in Illinois are getting compared to other states, compared to the rest of the world. You are not cutting it, and something needs to change. What are you going to do about it? That's why the more local the government, the better. And should public education continue to be provided? Of course it should. Of course it should. But it can't be a place where indoctrination sets in. It can't be a place where the people who control the power because they have the money, because they have the power in the NEA, in the other teachers' unions that exist, it can't be a place where their political bent seeps into what is approved inside the classroom. Now, I've been looking at this, and if we didn't have such a strong cabinet, such a strong president, such a strong goal, moving at a rapid pace right now in Washington, D.C., I don't know that I would be thinking about this. But I almost want to challenge, this is not realistic as an end goal, but think about this for a second. As a method to explain your point, I grew up in a time where religion was still somewhat present, if needed, if it was maybe adherent to the teacher in the classroom or whatever. But I grew up initially when religion in the classroom wasn't something that was completely and totally absent. And then I would say probably around junior high, high school, mid-90s, late-90s into the year 2000 or so, there was a huge, huge focus on separation of church and state, get religion out of schools. There shouldn't be praying in schools. Who's sanctioning that? You know, trying to work very hard to remove God, any evidence anywhere inside the classroom of any sort of religious affiliation. My recollection is that in my lifetime, there have been public schools that had prayer in them. And you could participate or you could not participate. It was up to you to sit there in your desk and be like, I'm not praying to this. This is not my thing. It wasn't forced. It wasn't graded, but it was included. And that has, in the last 40 years, changed significantly. But we didn't just say, no, we're not going to indoctrinate people on these types of belief systems. What we've said is we're not going to do that belief system. We're going to do this belief system. We're going to put in a belief system not backed by science in any way, shape, or form, which, again, is the same argument that they would use towards creationism. If you wanted to teach science in a public school and creationism was included in the conversation, that was very often talked about as indoctrination. You can't base it in science. Science says the earth is billions of years old or whatever. That's the way it is. That's the way it goes. Well, to the other side, when that pendulum swings to the other side, if science says there are two sexes, then why are we using classroom time paid by the taxpayer who doesn't have a say specifically in what is going on in that classroom, why are we teaching that there are more than two? If it's not backed by science, why is it in there? Well, that's because that's what people believe. Listen, you can believe whatever you want. People know what I believe here. Of course, I talk about being a Christian. A lot of you probably think that I'm very naive and gullible to think that the fantasy of, you know, some sort of all-powerful God created the whole world. I understand. It makes sense to me that there are people who hear that and go, Annie, that's cute. That's fine. You have a right to believe what you want, but I have a right to believe what I want. In our school systems, kids don't have a right to their own belief system, and the money that flows through the teachers' unions, the money that flows through into the school districts, has a belief system. And we've been told for the last 20 years that that belief system is necessary in the classroom to educate your children, to the extent where we keep hearing that they're not your children, they are all of our children. Big red flag. Now, you know how much I advocate for parochial school. Lutheran schools specifically. That's, I went mostly to Lutheran schools. I did go to public school for a year. I went to a public college. I send my kids to Lutheran schools. My husband teaches in a public school. I think that the education of our kids, we don't have to even get into belief systems to look at the numbers, the test scores that are coming out of public education classrooms, to say we have to fix something here. We have to refocus what we're investing in here, because the kids are not all right. They are not in a position right now where, oh yeah, well, this belief system has been injected into the classroom, but the kids are doing great. The scores are through the roof. They've never been better. That's not the case. Strip it all out. Take the belief systems out. Teach science, teach math, teach reading comprehension and literacy and grammar. Teach these kids the things they know to be productive adults once they graduate, and good people, I might add. Does this Supreme Court ruling seem like a positive turn of events for you? It certainly does for me. It's a step. Greg Jarrett will tell us at 1:30 exactly what that might manifest into, what the next step will be. Linda McMahon has said, she said on Fox earlier this morning, when she was talking, I think, to Harris Faulkner, she said, I want to eliminate the bureaucracy. And when she said that, I thought, well, that's interesting. That doesn't sound like you want to eliminate the department. You want to eliminate the bureaucracy that's dragging down public education at the benefit of the people who have a stake in it, the teachers' unions, not the teachers. The teachers are suffering under the teachers' unions that don't even represent them. They just want to collect power. We're going to talk with Dana Perino next. I know she cares deeply about the education standards of students in our country, and I'm going to give her the opportunity to react to this and discuss it. And also, I want to know from her, our YouTube live chat poll for today is, can blue states be saved? Had a pretty viral tweet over the weekend with a conversation we had with Congresswoman Mary Miller, and she said that, hey, folks, in Illinois, even if just gun owners, if 2A supporters voted in that election for Republicans, we could win. It is possible we could win. In light of that, you've got states like New York, California, and of course, my home state of Illinois. You've got a socialist running for mayor in New York. How far have has the Democrat Party gone, and can these blue states be saved? Yes, no, or keep them blue. Got to put something in there for you folks, too. Let's take a quick break. Dana Perino next.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The National Education Association claims Americans are unhappy about the U.S. Supreme Court ruling and put out this statement. Take a look. Do they speak for you? I don't know. Pay attention. America's educators and parents won't be silent as Donald Trump, with the support of the MAGA Supreme Court, strips our students, our families, our communities of protections and funding that Congress has mandated. But a recent Gallup poll says no. Here are the facts. It found that just 24% of Americans are satisfied with the state of American public education. 73% are not.
Well, there's Harris Faulkner reporting on that Supreme Court ruling from yesterday, saying that the Trump administration can, in fact, go ahead on their efforts to reform, if not eliminate, the Department of Education. I want to bring our guest on with us to talk about this. Dana Perino joins us once again, the co-anchor of America's Newsroom, co-host of The Five, host of Perino on Politics, and author of her latest, greatest book, I Wish Someone Had Told Me. Dana Perino, welcome back to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I was pretty excited to hear about that ruling yesterday from the Supreme Court. I am one that sends my kids to a parochial school, and I pay a ton of property tax dollars in the state of Illinois. Would like to be able to to use that for my own kids. When you see this ruling from the Supreme Court yesterday, what kind of reaction did you have?
Well, I feel like it's there, a lot of these issues. It's interesting. And if I go back to when I started my career in politics, I was a press secretary on Capitol Hill in the mid-90s. These issues were kind of still bubbling up, then, just sort of like starting really to bubble to the surface. Okay. Then it's become boiling over, the pot, over the last several years and the last couple of administrations. And it takes a while, unfortunately, but also it's just our system, for things to work its way up to the Supreme Court. And now what you have is a series of decisions at the Supreme Court level that are going in the direction of parental rights and school choice. And I think that that's obviously a very positive development. But what's interesting, too, is this is coming at a time when the big, beautiful bill included a $1,700 tax credit for families like yours if your state allows it.
Yeah, that's so not going to happen.
That's
in
the caveat, right?
Yeah.
But for, like, let's say that you're a family in Georgia and you want to send your kid to parochial school or maybe a charter school or even do homeschooling, your accountant should know that they not only do you have the protection of the Supreme Court to do what you want to do as you raise your children and how you educate them, but there is now a tax credit there so that you can get a little bit of relief for the costs that you're paying in addition to the property taxes that you have to pay.
Amen to that. Dana Perino speaking with us right now. But even in the midst of, I come every day and work in a blue city in St. Louis, mm-hmm. but in a red state of Missouri, and I live in the blue city or blue state of Illinois, in the red southern part of Illinois. It makes a lot of sense, though, for President Trump to say put this back on the states, because I think that I have a clearer, faster line to the people in the state of Illinois who are serving in the legislature to try to pressure them
Absolutely.
To make change. So that's a benefit
Absolutely.
Of this.
It is. And I always have said that local government is the hardest government. Okay, meaning it's the hardest to deal with. My Aunt Patty Sue was the mayor of Rawlins, Wyoming for many years. And it's not like in D.C. where you say, okay, we're going to spend $1 trillion on this, and then you walk away and you hope that people yeah. spend the money well. If you're the mayor, then okay, then you're getting the grant for $6,502, and you have to make sure that the playground equipment is going to be delivered on time, installed correctly and safely, and then you're going to have to see the constituents at the grocery store. And so, you know, I always say that, like, local government is the toughest government, but it's also the most effective. And so, you know, you want to have good people there. Now, you could have a state like New York, where I live, in de Blasio's administration. De Blasio gave his wife $1 billion in taxpayer money to use to help the homeless situation. When he left, after his term ended, guess what? Nobody knew where any of that money was. It was untraceable.
Wow.
So it's not always foolproof, but in many cases, in my opinion, it is the most effective type of government, the closer you are to the people.
Yeah. Amen. And I think that that's something that really needs to empower grassroots movements in states like mine in Illinois, yours in New York, for actual effective change. It does seem like, listening to Harris Faulkner read those numbers with that Gallup poll, that the state of education in our country right now is abysmal and people know it.
Well, that's my obsession, Annie. In fact, this past week, when everybody's been fighting about an issue that is in the past, our K through 12 education in America is so abysmal. And especially in big cities, you will have many children who cannot read or do basic math at their grade level, and they get passed along. And there's no way that they can compete. I met a guy 2 weeks ago, just by chance, African-American guy. He was talking to his friends, and he had some really interesting takes on the Diddy trial. Okay. So I just said, can I ask you, like, where do you get your news? And he said, I didn't learn to read till I was 25 when I was in prison. And the fact is, like, my friend Paul Morrow, who you've probably seen on Fox News, he'd be a great guest for you someday. He's retired NYPD. And he said that if you go to Rikers Prison, you could pick, he said, you know, eight out of 10 of those guys that are there never learn to read. And so what are we doing to our kids? So when Bernie Sanders and everybody wants to talk about free community college, I just want to pull my hair out, because you wouldn't need free community college. I'm not against free community college, but if you're going to not educate people in the K through 12 era, then don't come to me with community college nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it sounds like a nice handout and just doesn't have any sensibility
and
to it.
You mentioned something else about, you know, grassroots movements. I do think that on the parental rights side of things, one, we can be grateful that we have a conservative Supreme Court. That was, at first, many people might not like Mitch McConnell, but whatever. To me, I'm like, look at what he did. And he stuck to his guns and he said, no, we are not going to put through Merrick Garland. Can you imagine if he was a Supreme Court justice after him being Attorney General? So you have the conservative movement on that front. But what else did you have? You had parents who went to all the school board meetings, especially during COVID, and said, no more. And now you're starting to see that as well, especially with moms and dads who are sticking up for girls in girls' sports.
Yeah. How did the Democrat movement become so aggressively progressive in that these obvious, you know, we've talked about 80-20 issues for a year now, probably, and some of them lean over 80%. But the things that you're listing here, like, you don't have to even know what your politics are to see the common sense here.
It's very interesting. Years ago, there was a great book I'd highly recommend to people. It's been a while, so people, I think, have kind of forgotten about it. It's written by Jonah Goldberg, who's now at The Dispatch, I guess. It's called Liberal Fascism. And he goes through and he says, even though the left will always call the right fascist, if you actually look at the policy perspectives and the approaches of progressives, that is liberal fascism. And what happens is they'll get very patient, right? They'll have a goal. Let's say it's, you know, universal health care. And they'll just be very patient. And well, guess what's happened, Annie? Look at it right now. What's happening on health care? Oh, now the Republicans are talking about expanding Obamacare. Why? The people want it. Why do the people want it? Because they think it's a better deal for them. Yes. But also because no one else is putting forward a better idea. I think that's what's happening on the left, is that you have a younger generation like Mom Donnie, for example, AOC. They are very clever in their use of language. They absolutely know how to communicate to people. And they say things that sound good to people. But what's happened is Republicans have been like, but that doesn't make any sense. And so we are, thankfully, in an era of common sense. And I think that ultimately will win the day. But make no mistake, they start to get a little bit of a foothold and then they move forward. And then all of a sudden, it's like all of a sudden Republicans are defending Obamacare. And that's what happens. And that book, Liberal Fascism, goes through not just the history of it, but what we could expect in the future. And he nailed it.
Yeah, I appreciate that recommendation. I want to talk about another book recommendation here in just a second. But before I get to that, it just so happened this past Sunday at church, my pastor brought up right before September 11th happened, an initiative by the Bush administration, which were the faith-based initiatives, and said it was a big thing. He was one of the pastors who was brought to D.C. to weigh in on this. And, you know, when we're talking about solutions for people, I think the left is like, there's a government solution for that, no matter what. It's like the new there's an app for that. But now I feel like the Republicans could really have a strong message in encouraging nonprofits, religious organizations to really step up to the plate and say, yeah, we can all point at the same problem and say these problems do exist. We have to differ on where the solution is because the government clearly isn't solving the problem. Would you like to see the faith-based initiative idea get a new push?
See, what's interesting is, yeah, so when President Bush was governor of Texas, and even before that, even before he even ran for Congress, he, in Decision Points, he in his autobiography, he writes about how the most important decision he ever made was his decision to give up drinking. And the way that he gave up drinking was to turn it over to God and ask for help. And he always maintained that, yes, government should be there to help people, but government can't heal a heart. It's impossible. That's not what government is for. And so he started faith-based initiatives because for many years, decades, they had been prevented from getting government grants in order to do some programs like drug prevention, okay, or addiction services. And so we had the faith-based initiative. It was very, very popular and successful. When Obama came in, he eliminated the office. Trump came back. Trump comes into office. He puts it back. Biden comes in. They take it away again. And now it's back. And so I would like to see maybe Congress step forward and provide more of a law, because we're being whipsawed on the executive branch having to take on the responsibilities of a legislative branch that refuses to do its work.
Yeah,
I think that's true in immigration, school choice, all of these issues, because Congress actually doesn't do anything except for pass a big spending bill once a year. And so I would absolutely love to see more of a faith-based foundation that could be backed up by the Supreme Court. And then you could have more of a pipeline so that a program that might take 2 or 3 years to get off the ground isn't cut off at the knees when there's a new administration.
Yeah, that's very smart. And I would love to see that happen, because there's a lot of help that can be provided. And it takes too long to wait for government to show up and at least make the attempt to solve a lot of these problems.
Yeah.
Dana Perino is here with us. Her newest, latest book, I Wish Someone Had Told Me. I love how quick you can consume this book that you put together with all of these anecdotes from different people that a lot of us who watch Fox News regularly or connected with the people you're connected with. It makes it a little extra personal because we feel like we know these people. But you put this book together. It's advice that you had asked people for, maybe in interviews or in your real experience. I mean, I would almost think you're probably ready to write a second book that's part two of this.
You know, what's interesting. My other book, Everything Will Be Okay, was very much targeted to like women going through their quarter life crisis. And I love that book. And it came out right after COVID, so March of 2021. And it's called Everything Will Be Okay. And even though I'd come up with a title months before COVID, people thought I did it because of COVID. And even to this day, people are still reading that book, women. But I felt post-COVID and with the new feeling, new approaches to being in the office or hybrid work and AI, that there was time for an update. So the way I tried to write it was in a way that would be more like scrollable content. So if you are going through your phone on Instagram and blah, 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 that kind of how the book reads. So you get the little snippets and you can set it down, pick it back up. I had a woman this weekend staying with me who used to be a government lawyer. She worked for the the Secret Service. But she has a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, and she decided to stay home. And she said it almost tore her in two. Yeah. And she was really upset. She's like, I worked really hard to be a lawyer to do this. And I said, have you read Michelle Chase's advice in the new book? And she hadn't. And I said, look, all you have to do is go to page whatever it is, and all of it's right there. So you don't have to read the entire book start to finish, though you're welcome to. But if you just need a little bit of a, wait, what was that advice about what I should do if I'm going to stay home and raise my children? Oh, okay. And you can go to it. And I love that about this book.
Yeah, 100%. Dana Perino and her book, I Wish Someone Had Told Me, is out right now. Last question for you, and we're going to let you go. You are huge into mentorship. You have talked about mentors you've had and people that you've mentored. It's, to me, it's kind of like an old practice that really needs to be brought back. Obviously, books are there for folks like me and others to source. But what is your advice to people who think, you know what, I really could use a mentor? What should they do?
Well, this is a great question. To me, Annie, there is a big gap in supply and demand for mentors to people who are looking for advice, which is one of the reasons I wrote the books, because I recognize that I can't have lunch and coffee with everybody that is asking me for help. So I'm like, here's all your advice. But there's nothing like that human connection. And also, to me, there's nothing like being able to help a young person in their career. I find tremendous satisfaction and personal growth for myself when I do that. So for anybody listening who is in the position of being a mentor, I highly recommend it. I'll give you one example. Fox Ad Sales was going to do an event with me with my book. And they said, are you okay with that? And I said, I am, with under one condition. Anybody who's coming that's one of our clients has to bring somebody who they are mentoring. Mm. And you kind of have to force people to do that. Bring these young people along. I'm very concerned that AI is taking over the entry-level job, which means that there are young people who are leaving high school, community college, trade school, or college and coming to work, and they don't have any idea what they're doing. And so it's incumbent upon us to not let the robots try to take over.
Amen. Yeah. Do you learn from your mentorees?
Oh my gosh, yes. I have my assistant now is Kate DiPietro. A year ago, I nicknamed her as a joke, Kate, TikTok Kate, and now everybody knows her. But every day we learn from each other, and we've been on this journey that is just so fun. And yeah, it's definitely mutual. Like, for example, I didn't even know what Love Island was until this week. Now I know. And she's out there laughing and giggling, but now I know what Love Island is. I mean, I was out of the loop, Annie.
Not
all
anymore.
Of America's watching a show I'd never heard of.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to learn across generations, of course, and it does definitely go both ways. The book is I Wish Someone Had Told Me, and it's a must read from Dana Perino. I read your Everything's Gonna Be Okay book. I was pregnant with my fourth child, and
I remember
I was laying on the floor in the doctor's office taking a glucose test, and I just listened to that book. And I thought, everything's going to be okay. It was great.
And look at you.
Yeah.
Everything is okay, right?
It is. All because of you, Dana Perino.
No,
we appreciate it.
The truth is, like, all because of God, really.
Amen to that.
And if
as
you
well.
Think about, like, just when you feel overwhelmed, if you just remember that, everything will be okay.
Psalm 46:10, be still. That's the advice
that
that's the advice that I always need to calm down.
And with four little ones, You need it.
Dana Perino, a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for being
Annie,
with us.
I want to be, I'll come back sooner, okay?
Okay, absolutely.
Okay.
Done.
Take care.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Brad, mark that down. Tomorrow at 12:15.
I'm on it.
she is one of my absolute favorites. So always love to speak with her. And truly, I know we're kind of maybe past graduation gift time, but we're also very close to time to send them away to college time. Send them with this book. Give them a hard copy so that they can. I get nothing. If she sells out of all of her books after this interview, I get zero from it. Other than the satisfaction of knowing that something that I have used myself, I can pass along to you and say, this is a really great source of information from things as practical as like, how to dress when you go to the office, to understanding intra-office types of relationships, how to present yourself in a confident way, how to learn from mistakes and roll with it. That was the Everything Will Be Okay book that I was talking about reading in 2021. But this one, it really is anecdotes over and over and over again. She's got stuff in there from Bill Hemmer, Brett Baer, Trey Gowdy. Those are some that off the top at the very beginning. But it goes through and it just walks you through advice. And these are highly successful people. They understand what they're talking about. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's see here. We're going to talk a little bit about the YouTube live chat poll quickly when we come back. Can blue states be saved? Yes, no, or keep them blue. Annie Fry YouTube channel to vote in the live chat poll. And you can stream us live on the Odyssey app too. Take us wherever you go after lunch. Pop on the Odyssey app and find 97.1. Don't miss a thing. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. The blue states and the red states, there are fewer, in my opinion, super dark blue. Harris Faulkner, because she lives in New Jersey, she always refers to him as cobalt blue. And I just think that's a pretty vision, except for the fact that that means the state politics suck. It seems as though there are fewer states that are super hardcore blue. For instance, the state of Florida was single-handedly responsible for choosing the president of the United States with the hanging chads in 2000 between George W. Bush and Al Gore, because it was such a purple state. However purple you can get, was it hundreds or thousands of votes? I mean, it was teeny tiny margin. It goes to Supreme Court. The rest is history. Florida is like the reddest state there is. They're the party where the Florida Republican Party, they're the ones who have the act together the most. They count the votes the fastest. They're the third largest state by population, I think. California, Texas, Florida.
I think so.
I mean, we need to be following the Florida model. Illinois has got a way to go because we're super, super blue. California is super, super blue. That's not changing. Not anytime soon.
You got to believe, Annie.
But it could go you could throw a tinge of red in there and it turns a little purple.
Yeah.
And I think this tweet that I had posted this weekend of Mary Miller being on the show saying, Illinois has the votes. We have the people. They just need to show up and vote. You need to show up and vote. And if you're sitting here saying, Annie, I vote every time, well, then you need to go find people who don't vote, who are also not happy with the situation, and you need to get them to vote. The predictability, and now the other thing that I see a lot in, I don't know, I think it ended up with over 1,000 retweets, which for our little account in our tiny corner of X is a pretty significant deal. People are like, it doesn't matter. You can't beat the cheat. Do you feel that in the state of Illinois? Ethan, you used to be, and you fled to the red state.
Sure did. Don't regret it for a second. You know,
listen to that. Listen to that. Chip on his shoulder.
It's hard. It's hard to know, right? You know, you'd like to believe, right, that if the votes are there, that things can change. And we have seen that. We saw that in the 2024 election in certain areas of the country, right, where people were fed up and they were over the BS that you'd been hearing, shoving all this agenda about the Democratic Party down your throats. And people got tired of it and things started to change, right? That's why President Trump got voted in. That's why you saw certain areas of the country that had traditionally been blue go red. So, you know, out of a hope, right, that things can change, I would like to say that yes, it's not too far gone and that, you know, Illinois can eventually, you know, I don't know what would have to happen, like you said, for it to entirely turn red, but you'd like to hope, right, that it's not too far gone, right?
Well, I think it's savable. Of course I think it's savable, especially when the Democrat Party sounds like this. For instance, Gavin Newsom, who is not running for governor again, right? Didn't he say he's not running for governor again? Isn't he?
Right.
So there are people who are throwing their hat in the ring. What's going to happen next for governor? Maybe it'll be Harris Faulkner. And that's kind of like California taking one for the team so that she doesn't have to run again for the presidency. Although I, for one, would applaud her. I'll donate to her campaign if she wants to be the one to run again. Here's Gavin Newsom. This is what the modern, I mean, Gavin Newsom is top three, I would think, of national figures who run the Democrat Party, who are leading the Democrat
Party. What
about
for your values? I mean, is 8 years old too young?
Yeah, I mean, look, I now that I have a nine-year-old, just became nine, come on, man, I get it. So those are legit. You know, it's interesting, just the issue of age,
He can't finish a sentence. He can't finish a sentence. Sean Ryan is asking him if 8 years old is too young to determine that the child would need a sex change. All that he has said right now is that he has a nine-year-old. If saying I have a nine-year-old is immediately not followed by hell no, an 8 year old can't make that decision, then this guy is the reddest red flag that there has ever been.
As someone that's been so focused on equality, broadly LGBT rights, particularly gay marriage.
Mm-hmm. He's just saying words.
Yeah, isn't
he's
it?
He's just saying words. He's like LGBT, transgender, equality, equity, equity, equity. You buy an equity?
There's such a, I have to say partially what I believe while also fitting the narrative of what my voters want. They're like, you don't know who the real Gavin Newsom is, yeah, which is super frustrating.
You do. You know,
this is the real Gavin Newsom, right?
Yeah, he's trying to please as many people as possible because he has no principles to stand on. He just wants to be the president.
The trans issue for me is also not.
Okay, you can't see the hands. You can't see the
mystical
hands.
Jazz hands.
Tyrus said one time that he was trying to signal like relational advances. Like he walks through, it's the weirdest thing ever. You can find it on X, but he has two hand gestures for every word.
It's over the last few years. I'm trying to understand as much as anyone else. Whole pronoun thing. Trying to understand all of that. Well, you know, that was like the hell. I mean, all that
These
stuff.
Aren't sentences.
I get it. All this stuff started to collapse.
He says, I get it. There's one thing that I'm certain about here. You, sir, do not get it.
I'm not even listening to him. I'm just looking at his hand gestures.
Yeah, which I think is the point.
It's working.
It's on us. On me. I joked with Charlie about Latinx, you know.
Gosh, we're so screwed if this guy launches out of California and somehow or another ends up in the federal government. Lord have mercy. The question for you is, can blue states be saved from that? Yes, no, or keep them blue. Go and vote. Go and vote in that right now and give me some hope. I'll give you some more details about how Illinois can be saved about 1:20 on the show. Next up, Wiggins America, Ethan edition. What did you say? Younger, handsomer, better?
Something like that.
We'll be right back.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Not Wiggins America, Ethan's America. Ethan's America.
It's important that people understand that when Ryan Wiggins takes some days off and Ethan fills in on Wiggins America, that was made by Ryan for Ethan.
Yeah. You know, he does have a certain kind of power over me, even when he isn't here.
Does he have a power over you?
Well, you know, I mean, when he gets to play stuff like that, even when he's not here.
Yeah.
And, you know...
He certainly exerts every ounce that he can get.
I cannot wait to see what, you know, for my local segment later this afternoon, what is going to be playing this week. I really enjoyed yesterday's. Yesterday may have even been my favorite.
It was nice.
And I wasn't
Something about you being handsome.
I wasn't even here. Yeah, you know, I kind of got like the butterflies. Aww. Like, Ryan called me handsome.
Local
you know,
news at 2:18 today.
I did actually ask Ryan, you know, hey, any thoughts on, you know, Wiggins America subjects while you're gone? And he gave me this one and he was very clear. He said, you need to study these.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, okay. And then I read the article. I was like, you jerk. 6 signs that your coworkers don't like you.
Oh, Ryan.
So mean.
Wiggins.
So I'm going to go through these and, well, I guess we'll figure out actually if Ryan doesn't like me or if any of us don't like
each
other.
I just think that Ryan might not have thought this one through. Go on.
Number one, they rarely include you in group discussions. While it's not necessary they always discuss their personal matters with you, make sure they inform you about all team meetings. They give you a chance to talk to them about new strategies or projects. Not involving you may happen for various reasons, like they may feel like you rarely contribute, or they are trying to determine if it's just your assumption. Consider talking to them openly about your feelings.
Oh, I was kind of with it until the end.
No feelings.
None. Don't
Zero.
Bring them to work.
Don't bring them to work.
Don't bring them to work.
So what is the alternative?
Address the situation and see what needs to be done to make it better.
Yeah, but that could include your feelings, couldn't it? Doesn't
no.
have to, though.
It's bottom line, what needs to be done to make the product the best, to make the team work the most. And if you feel like you're being excluded, be like, hey, if there's something I'm not doing here, if I need to step it up, let me know what I can do to contribute.
Last I checked, us three were in a group chat this morning that Ryan was not in.
There's a bunch of things happening without him here. He excluded himself, though.
Number two here, they show negative body language when talking to you. So examples like this may look, if they keep looking around when you speak in meetings, might be a sign they're not interested in what you're contributing.
Like just everywhere but at you.
Mm-hmm. When they turn to their side or back when you're passing by their desk. That's another example. That's really intense.
I think we're a little past subtleties in that regard.
You know, maybe, you know, that is kind of maybe it's just a coincidence, but every time that I walk by Ryan's office,
he
has turned away from me and usually like face deep in like some chicken nuggets or like a burger or
Not
something
work.
Like that. No, never
Food.
Work. Hey, Ryan at work. Good one. Let's see. What's the 850? Okay. All right. The next one, they never celebrate your successes. Colleagues who celebrate your successes can make you feel really comfortable at work when you notice that other members of your team never congratulate you or appreciate your hard work.
Have you ever heard when we get an award on the show how he treats me?
I've heard it. Usually in a pretty sarcastic manner.
We could play some of them for you.
Oh, we could
later
have.
We could
probably have a whole segment.
We should just roast Ryan while he's gone.
Oh, I mean, I thought that's what we were doing.
Yeah, we could just do it more in the 2 o'clock hour.
I'm all about this. I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge pro roast.
This show gets acknowledged by awards here and there every once in a while, mm-hmm. and he cannot wait to tell the world about it.
Yeah.
We're like the 6th most listened or something midday local show, and he's like, could have been top 5, but...
But we weren't.
But we were. Wonder why that is.
Wiggins being Wiggins.
Yeah.
Do we want to do another one here before we wrap?
One more quick one.
Okay. They avoid working with you. If you notice your colleagues seem unhappy when your supervisor...
That's what he's doing right now.
...asks them to collaborate with you on tasks. You may ask them about it directly. Good technique is to explain that you care about maintaining a healthy atmosphere at work and ask if you've done anything to offend them. In some instances, they may behave this way simply because they're uncomfortable when working with anyone and prefer performing tasks on their own.
Yeah, just talk about it. Talk about the work, not the feelings. No?
Yeah, sure.
Are you a feelings guy?
It depends on the situation, how severe it is.
All right, Jim Carafano and Greg Jarrett in the next hour. Don't go away.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.